Hello and welcome to the DebtWired podcast. I'm your host, Laura Gardner, and I'm honored to be joined today by Lee Buchheit. Lee is an honorary professor at the University of Edinburgh Law School. His legal career spans over 40 years, during which he has worked on more than 24 sovereign debt restructurings. Hi, Lee. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, Laura. Good to be with you.
Today, we will be discussing value recovery instruments and how they are being used in sovereign debt restructurings. They seem to be a feature of every single live sovereign debt workout at the moment, but they are not a new instrument. To start us off, Lee, would you be able to tell us, well, first of all, what are they and what are the origins of these instruments? When did they start being used?
The instruments, and there are a variety of forms, but the instruments are intended to recompense creditors that enter into a sovereign debt restructuring. If it turns out that in the future the debtor country experiences greater prosperity than what was anticipated at the time that the debt restructuring terms were agreed, they were first used at the time of the Brady Initiative. That began, you recall, in 1990. And the Brady countries that relied principally on the sale of oil for their foreign currency earnings were asked to issue what were called oil warrants. So let's take Mexico, which was the first. Mexico at that time derived 75% of its foreign currency earnings from the sale of oil. Therefore, if in the future the market price of oil was higher than what had been budgeted when the IMF program was agreed and the debt terms were structured, that was going to be a pretty good proxy for Mexico having a degree of prosperity. And so the oil warrant was relatively simple. It said if the price of oil goes above a threshold strike price, then Mexico would begin making payments on this warrant. Oil warrants were used for the oil exporting countries in the Brady era, Mexico, Nigeria, Venezuela. Interestingly, Ecuador in 1995 refused to issue an oil warrant, even though it too was an oil exporter. For the countries that did not have a single commodity that you could link a warrant to, people began to try out different approaches. For example, Uruguay, in its Brady deal, issued an instrument which effectively looked at the price of Uruguayan exports, beef, wool, rice, that sort of thing, and deflated it by the price of oil, which Uruguay imports. And so that was a bespoke type of warrant. And then as you moved further into the 1990s and certainly into this century, the value recovery instruments began to look at the gross domestic product of the debtor country. And if the GDP in some future year exceeds a specified benchmark, then payments on a GDP warrant would begin.
Thankfully, that's really comprehensive. So you've spoken about some instruments that are linked to oil or commodities, some instruments that are linked to GDP. There's also a nuance with the structure, right? So there's some instruments that are structured as separate to the restructured bonds, some that are included within the bonds. Would you be able to run us through that nuance?
First, there are two principled arguments for why sovereign debtors should issue value recovery instruments in a debt restructuring. The first is simple fairness. The creditors will say, look, you sovereign debtor, come to us and ask for debt relief. We provide it. If in the future it turns out that you experience a greater degree of prosperity than we all thought you might, it's only fair for you to recompense us in part for the debt relief we provided today. We are, after all, co-authors of your future prosperity. That's the first principled argument. The second principled argument is that the terms of a sovereign debt restructuring are based upon the debt sustainability analysis for the country that the IMF will have provided. And the debt sustainability analysis, quite honestly, is nothing more than a compilation of estimates about future conditions, the price of commodities, interest rates, all of that. The creditors will argue, look, we set the terms of the debt relief to reflect the IMF's prediction or guess about those future conditions. Suppose it turns out that the IMF was too conservative and things were actually better than what the IMF projected they would be. What that means in practice is we gave you debt relief back then in excess of what you actually needed. And therefore, it's fair for you to recompense us now for what we're giving. You ask the nature of the instrument. There have been two approaches to it. Some of the early ones simply said that if the value recovery trigger is hit, that will, for example, step up the coupons on the instruments that the debtor is issuing in the debt restructuring. Or, for example, in, I think, Costa Rica, the deal was that if the value recovery is triggered, that will require prepayment of the past due interest bond that the country had issued in that debt restructuring. The other way to format the instrument is as a separate freestanding instrument. Now, in the early Brady deals, the terms were that that freestanding value recovery instrument was attached to the underlying bond issued in the restructuring. But the bondholders never liked that. They wanted a separate piece of paper to trade. And so it is now much more common to see a separate freestanding instrument, a GDP warrant, a commodity warrant, whatever it is, that almost from the day that the restructuring closes can be traded separately in the market.
Great. Yeah, so I guess we've seen that in Ukraine, for example, is a good example. But what are the common issues, I guess, that these instruments face? Despite being quite popular and used, they do face quite a bit of criticism. So I just wonder if you could run us through some of the problems that have been experienced in the past.
Let me start that with problems as the debtor, the sovereign debtor, sees it. The theory, as I explained, is that these instruments recompense creditors for debt relief they provide in the debt restructuring. The sovereigns will say, well, now hang on. If the value recovery instrument is formatted as a separate freestanding instrument that trades almost immediately away from the underlying bond, it will trade into the hands of people who never were creditors of the Republic of Ruritania and never gave us any debt relief. That's the first criticism. Second criticism that the sovereigns will make is that issuing value recovery instruments in a debt restructuring often results in very little, if any, improvement in the debt restructuring terms. Why? Because the instruments, when they're issued, almost by definition, are wildly out of the money. They are triggered only by future events that are considerably better than the current state of affairs. So when the instruments are issued, their market value is often quite small. And indeed, if you look all the way back to those Brady oil warrants, they had a negligible market value, and people didn't even keep track of them, whether they owned them. It's only when the price of oil went above the strike price that people started actually looking around in their drawers to find out whether they owned the instruments. So that's from the sovereign debtor side. The sovereign debtor will say, this is a losing proposition. We get very little, if any, benefit in improvement in restructuring terms. But if the instrument comes into the money in the future, we wind up paying quite a bit of money. And we pay it to people, many of whom never were our creditors and never did provide debt relief. The creditors have a separate set of concerns with the instruments. The first is the calculation that goes into having the instrument be triggered, particularly if it is gross domestic product. If you rely on a domestic statistical agency in the debtor country, and that was done in Argentina in 2005, you always run the risk that the government can influence that statistical agency to manipulate the figures that will determine whether the VRI begins to pay. Second, some of the formula that go into these instruments are extraordinarily complicated. I used to worry that we might be publishing an atomic bomb formula in the form of a value recovery instrument. And reasonable people can differ in the future as to how those formulae are to be interpreted. That indeed is precisely what is happening in the case of Argentina right now. There are lawsuits both in New York and in London in which Argentina and a group of holders of the warrant are quarreling over the interpretation of the formula. So there is that risk. Other criticisms?
I guess there are issues around the payment caps in cases like Ukraine and other, if it has to be structured carefully, I guess is one of the...
It does. It is common for these instruments to have a cap on payments in any given year. Because after all, if in the future the prosperity is even greater than the optimists thought it might be, you can find yourself having to pay an enormous amount of money. But some of these instruments are not capped. Ukraine caps payments on its GDP warrant, I think, through 2025, but thereafter it is uncapped. And one could see a world in which the current hostilities in Ukraine end. Ukraine is the beneficiary of hundreds of billions of dollars of inward investment to reconstruct its economy, and its economy booms. You could easily see that happening. So that's another concern.
We've been through some of the issues, but like I said at the start of the show, there's still certainly in many of the live restructurings that we see, there's some form or other of value recovery instrument. I thought maybe we could look at some of the present examples. The case of Suriname is interesting. They have an oil-linked VRI as part of the restructuring that is hopefully closing in the next. What do you make of this instrument? How is it innovative? Do you think it can be effective?
Laura, Suriname is a very interesting case, and it isn't really in the same line as the value recovery instruments that have been issued to date. The situation in Suriname is this. The country needs debt relief now. There's no doubt about that. The country, however, has discovered hydrocarbon deposits offshore. And the engineers are saying that there's every reason to believe that in 5 or 6 years, they'll be able to exploit those deposits, and Suriname will be the beneficiary of considerable foreign currency earnings in the sale of natural gas or whatever it is. When the IMF did its debt sustainability analysis for Suriname, the IMF refused to include in its debt sustainability analysis any assumption about future income from those hydrocarbon deposits. But the IMF said we would support a value recovery feature that would be triggered if the hydrocarbon deposits come online. As I say, they're expected to come online in 5 or 6 years. So what the bondholders committee did was design, they agreed debt relief, including a principal haircut and an adjustment to coupons. But they said, if as and when the hydrocarbon fines begin to pay off a portion, I stress a portion, of the revenues that Suriname will receive from the sale of those products will be hived off and directed into an account that will repay the debt relief, all of the debt relief that the bondholders are giving as part of this restructuring. Now, that is innovative for a couple of reasons. First, no value recovery instrument to date that I'm aware of was ever structured to recompense the creditors for the entirety of the debt relief they provide at the outset. It was a sweetener. It was not a wholesale return to the status quo ante. Second, the way to analyze what's happening in Suriname is that the creditors are essentially saying that Suriname's debt difficulties are an intertemporal problem, which is to say Suriname is poor today, but has every reason to think it might be rich in 5 or 6 years. Therefore, this value recovery instrument essentially says, we'll give you debt relief today, but if the hydrocarbon deposits were online today, we would not be giving you debt relief. So, here's the deal. We'll give you debt relief today, but you pay us back everything when you start shipping the oil and the gas. And that is a very different approach to value recovery instruments. As I say, they're not sweeteners in this context. They're wholesale recovery of all debt relief being provided as part of the restructuring.
Thank you. So yeah, a pretty interesting example in the case of Suriname. Let's turn to Zambia now. Again, the negotiations there with bondholders have been marred by a disagreement. One of the reasons was, I guess, a disagreement between IMF expectations and their expectations of how the economy would perform. And the solution they've come up with in a preliminary agreement is an upside bond, which is linked to, among other things, Zambia's debt carrying capacity. I wonder what you make of this. This is the first time we see this such an instrument, I believe.
Yes, and I believe this replicates the approach that the bilateral creditors took to Zambia. It's a very curious way of approaching it. What it essentially says is, we will give you significant debt relief, but in a few years, on a particular day in 2026, if you meet certain criteria, we will walk back some of the debt relief. In effect, the terms of the new debt instrument get richer if on that day in the future, you turn out to meet certain criteria. That's an odd way of doing this. I think the bilateral creditors did it in order to accommodate China, but it puts the debtor country in a very curious position. If you were the financial authorities in the debtor country, you would have a considerable incentive not to meet those targets. In other words, you would have a considerable incentive on that specific day in the future to find yourself falling short of those targets in order to continue to enjoy the full measure of debt relief that you provide today. That strikes me as somewhat perverse.
Thanks, Lee. Yeah, that I think an issue that's difficult to get around. But let's see. It seems like the bondholders have certainly welcomed the preliminary agreement. There's another case I was hoping to discuss as well. A recent proposal by bondholders to the government of Sri Lanka that contains, again, another novel instrument, so-called macro-link bonds, which provides upfront debt relief, is index eligible, which has not been the case for other VRIs or contingent debt instruments. But the payouts are also linked to Sri Lanka's GDP performance. So just wondering what you make of this structure and how, you know, is it very different to previous iterations of GDP linked instruments?
It is different in certain respects. The Sri Lanka value recovery feature really focuses on what I described earlier as the second of the principled reasons for why one includes these in a sovereign debt restructuring. And that is that the terms of the sovereign debt restructuring are ultimately based upon the IMF's debt sustainability analysis. And again, a debt sustainability analysis is a series of educated guesses, speculation, very speculative judgments about the future. So what happens if, in making those predictions, the IMF is too conservative or too optimistic? The value recovery instruments to date have been designed to try to deal with the risk of being too conservative. So the IMF thinks the future will be gloomier than it turns out to be. Then the creditors would say, we gave you debt relief based upon what we now all realize with 2020 hindsight were too conservative assumptions about the future. It's fair that you pay us some additional amount. And that's essentially the approach the Sri Lankan instrument has. A criticism that the sovereign debtors have raised is, well, suppose the DSA assumptions turn out to be too optimistic and we get to the point in the future and, in fact, conditions are worse than the IMF thought they would be. What that means in practice is that, again, with 2020 hindsight, we did not extract from you bondholders enough debt relief. So why can't we design an instrument that is symmetrical? If they're too pessimistic, we pay more. If they're too optimistic, we pay less. This is the holy grail in designing these instruments. No one has done that yet. And I guess the closest to it would be a Zambia-type structure where it is set up that the deeper debt relief persists unless the country reaches a point of prosperity measured in certain metrics down the road.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Lee. I think that's all we have time for today. I guess we'll see how many of these proposals develop and how these instruments are used in upcoming sovereign debt restructurings. But for now, thank you so much, Lee, for joining us today.
My pleasure, Laura. Good to be with you.
And thank you to our audience for listening. Please support us by liking, sharing, and subscribing to the DebtWide podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcast. And see you next time.